Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to Afternoon Sport. What a show we have for you today. It's coming live from Jackson's on George in Sydney CBD on George Street. And what a lineup we have. Mark Waugh, Adrian Tucker, two fantastic New South Wales cricketers. Mark obviously played for Australia as well. And a man that many of you may have heard, Mark Gable from the Choir Boys. What a fantastic afternoon. I hope you enjoy this episode of Lunch with Lee, brought to you by Afternoon Sport. And welcome to Lunch with Lee. I'm your host Shane Lee. Today on the show, we've got Adrian Edward Tucker, a former New South Wales cricketer, playing 17 first-class matches for the Baggy Blues. He took 45 wickets and has the best figures of 5 for 38, which is outstanding. In his first Sheffield Shield final, he dismissed the great Alan Border twice, which is an amazing effort. Outside of cricket, he's been an equities trader. But now he runs the dog franchise with his lovely wife, Margaret, who's here. Hello, Margaret. Anyone's got a dog on during Christmas, sent to their place, they get treated like absolute royalty. He's a great mate of mine, exceptional debater, and as cue as a button, welcome Adrian Tucker. Also on the show today, Mark Edward Waugh, a former New South Wales Australian cricketer, playing 128 test matches and 244 ODIs for his country. He scored 8,000 test runs, 20 hundreds. He also scored 8,500 one-day runs with 1,800s, and is arguably to be the greatest fielder of all time. Post-career, he's a commentator and is involved in training thoroughbreds with his wife, Kim. He's a twin, he's a keen golfer, and was a little bit partial to a mullet back in the younger days. Welcome, boys.
Thanks, Shana. Mullet, geez, I'd love a mullet now, though. Geez. Need to flick it up from the back, yeah. But great to be here. Good to see so many people here. Hopefully we can entertain you for a little bit. Yeah, a couple of spinners and a fast bowler.
So I want to start, you probably don't know this, Junior, but Margaret, who I mentioned before, she used to go, when she was at university, she used to go to the SCG to actually watch you bat. How do you feel about that? As Adrian's wife now.
What's wrong with that?
Good judge. Did you have a bikini on in the outfit, in the members? Or, but those are the days, Shano. Even this place, Jackson's on George, we had a few big nights here after a test win or New South Wales. So, yeah, had a good following of women. So, good on you, Margaret. And I know I've got four dogs as well, so maybe we can sort out a deal there to look after the dogs and groom them. But, yeah, you're a good judge.
So I want to ask you, Tuck, I mentioned at the start, let's go back to your first Shield final. That, for people that know, I played 12 years for New South Wales. Adrian played before me and after me, but we never played a game together. He has the longest, I think, longest break in first-class history between matches, and that's including people who played in the war. I want to ask you, Adrian, what was that like? How old were you when you played your first Sheffield Shield final? You got Alan Border out twice. What were you thinking? How were you feeling?
Thanks, Shane. Great to be back at Jackson's. First Shield final, I think I was 20. And I sort of came a little bit out of nowhere. I remember they dropped Peter Taylor, the off-spinner for the game, and he was sort of the incumbent Australian off-spinner. But they went with Greg Matthews and me. But, you know, I knew I was surrounded by, you know, some players that either were or would become legends of the game. So, you know, I felt as though I was in a pretty good place going into that game. I was in decent form, or they wouldn't have picked me. And we sort of took it from there. And I was, you know, I got four wickets for the game, and two of them were AB. You know, first innings wasn't particularly exciting. He just chopped one on. It was sort of a little bit short, so I can't really claim that one. But in the second innings, I got him with a wrong, which, you know, even for the rest of the 15 years of my career, remained the best piece of bowling that I ever produced. So
beautiful.
Yeah, it showed my peak to 20.
Now, Junior, I want to ask, the Cricket World Cup's on at the moment. We saw India go into the final last night. They beat New Zealand, which is a huge effort. I think they're the form team. Australia plays the Yuppies tonight, rain pending. Who's going to be in the final? How will the Aussies go tonight?
Well, I mean, first of all, India have been outstanding. You know, they've that team they've got on the paddock now is probably one of the best 50-over teams I've seen for a long time. They've got five of the best bowlers in the tournament, three quick bowlers, two spinners, and they've got five great batsmen. They've only got Sky Yadav at number six, who hasn't done much, but he's a good player as well. Yep. So it's amazing to see how well they're playing. And all things being equal, they just win this tournament. I think they're about $3.50 at the start, so into about $1.30 now. They'll be hard to beat. The only thing that could beat them is if they lost the toss and whoever wins the toss bats first and gets 350, because the toss is so vital at the moment. Last night, even if New Zealand had won the toss, they had a sneaky hope of winning. But once they lost the toss, they'll me into one. And as it turned out, that was the case. So they're going to be extremely hard to beat in the final on Sunday. Tonight, of course, South Africa, Australia. We've got a great record against South Africa in past World Cups, obviously going back to 99. When we tied with them. Good piece of fielding, I thought, there, to tie that game. Can you remember it or what? This mug glare at mid-off. Flag, you're on that. You're in the camp too.
I was, mate, yeah.
Yeah, how nerve-wracking was that?
Oh, it was terrible.
They just should have shit in, because Lance Klusener never mishit a ball the whole tournament. His batting was amazing, and he was just smoking him everywhere. I think Buff Lima missed a run out from about 3 foot. And I thought, well, that's the game done. They're going to beat us, and then fortunately, we had two dopes at the crease, Lance Klusener and Alan Donald in the opposition, who just couldn't get their communication right. They stuffed up a run out earlier in the over when Darren missed the stumps. I thought, well, there's three balls to go. They need one to win. Lance Klusener hasn't mishit a ball all tournament. Surely he just faces the next two balls and doesn't run. If they don't get the runs off the next two balls, then the last ball you'd run. But lo and behold, the next ball, Damien Fleming was bowling, obviously a crucial over. Now, we talked about how to bowl to Lance Klusener for about an hour in the our team meeting the night before, and we just could not work out where the fuck to bowl him. Some were saying bowl Yorkers wide off some. Some were saying bowl a bouncer. Some were saying slower ball. Others were saying bowl at his heel, and we just did not have a clue, because wherever he bowled it, he was hitting it for four. So we just left it up to Flemmo, which was pretty brave, because he's a Victorian. So we left it up to Flemmo. Anyway, he actually bowled a really good Yorker. It was a pretty good Yorker, wide of off stump. And Klusener sort of hacked it off the inside edge, and it sort of bobbled quite awkwardly to this man at mid-off, which was me. And I moved around, swooped around to the left, did the old backhand panther. Just missed the stumps. And Flemmo fortunately fielded the ball, and we got the run out. So, I mean, that was the greatest game of cricket I've played in anyway, and one of the greatest wins. But that's got no relevance at all on what's going to happen tonight. They say that South Africa are chokers and we've got a great record against them, but they've actually beaten us quite regularly the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or last couple of months. They're a good side. They're batting extremely well. Their bowling is a little bit suspect, but so's ours. I don't think we bowl particularly well. They say there's a monsoon off the coast of Kolkata in the Bay of Bengal, so that's not a great sign, because if it rains, then South Africa go through. There is a spare day on Friday, so hopefully we get a game. I think it's 50-50. I really do. I don't think there's much between those two teams. Hopefully we win, obviously. But I think we're just going to play a little bit better. We need Mitchell Starc to come good. He hasn't bowled particularly well throughout the tournament. And I think the middle order, well, I suppose if we get another G Maxwell big show performance like we did against Afghanistan, then we just win anyway. So hopefully Maxie's on song again.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's going to be a draw, I think. But I want to ask Tuck, because Tuck, you were bowling leg spin in around the time the great late Shane Warne was bowling. I want to ask you about him, and do you think he destroyed all future spinners' potential reputations because how good he was? And what are your thoughts now on spinners playing a massive role in particularly not only one day cricket but T20 cricket?
Thanks, Shane. Talking about Warney, I mean, you've got to think back to even before I and he came on the scene, because we were about exactly the same age. There was a lot of talk about leg spin being a completely lost art then. And you know, he came through and just absolutely changed the game. The thing is, you've got to be really, really good. It's a difficult art. And, you know, a lot of the coaching I see and the actions that I see of leg spinners these days are guys trying to replicate Warnie, and you just can't do it because he was so strong through the shoulders and the hand. He had a technique that was really simple. It should be great to copy, but average people just can't do it. You need momentum through the crease to be able to do it. So, you know, I just don't see that being coached well at the moment.
We'll take a quick break now, and while we're having a lunch here at Jackson's on George, we're on the top terrace here. It's just been redone. What a beautiful setting it is, and it's a lovely day as well. Jackson's on George have just received a chef's hat, so the food is amazing. We're going to be sharing today some platters with some of the finest steak you'll ever have. The chicken here is off the charts, and all the trimmings and all the sides. We're going to be washing it down with a Sydney beer who's sponsoring today. There'll be plenty of those on tap. I'll be having a little glass of Chardonnay as well. This is going to be fantastic. Have you heard about Cell AED? It's the world's first mini personal defibrillator. You can keep it at home, the office, or even in your sports bag. Cell AED is game-changing technology that you can use if someone has sudden cardiac arrest, which can affect anyone from kids on the sporting field to adults at home. Sudden cardiac arrest happens suddenly with no warning. You only have minutes to get the defibrillator on the person affected. That's where Cell AED comes in. You can help save the life of someone you love. Every home should have a Cell AED. It's really a lifesaver. Learn more at cellaed.io. That's CELLAED.io.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
No, I think I remember we came to Jackson's on George here many years ago with the Australian cricket team, and Warnie would always come in late. He wasn't a big drinker. He used to drink the occasional Madeira and lemonade, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which is the old illusions, what they're called, I think, yeah. But he'd always walk in, he'd stand at the highest point in the bar just to announce himself. Because at the time I was single, and Warnie was always single on tour, wasn't he? It was
so you basically stood next to him.
Got I stood next to him, yeah.
A few of his offcuts.
That's it, mate, yeah. But, now, Gene, I want to ask you, mate, now, because you're back in the day, we mentioned you had a mullet. You had a good following of the young ladies who used to like you. I think you met your first girlfriend at Kingsgrove Sports Store, didn't you? Where'd you meet her? Was it in the bat cone section? Where was she?
I met a few before Sue, no. I mean, those days is different to these days, obviously. And the mullet was, if you didn't have a mullet in the 90s and the 80s, right. You just weren't in the game, were you? There's a few fellas here my age, if you didn't have a mullet, you had no hope. So it was just, yeah, I had a solid mullet, I must admit. pretty long, but embarrassing to look at some of the photos from times back in the 80s and 90s. But yeah, it was a different time then. I mean, these days the players have got so much scrutiny on them, and, you know, they can't scratch their nose without someone taking a photo of them, and they know that they get well paid for their cricket these days. But in those days, you could obviously get away with a lot more. But to be honest, my age group, my era was Tubby Taylor, Stephen, Gavin Robbo, those sorts of guys. We weren't actually big drinkers, apart from Tubby. But I first started playing with David Boone and Jeff Marsh and those guys and AB. They were real pissheads. But it was the next era that sort of were changed slightly. And we had a good time on tour, no doubt about it. But I think, you know, once it came to the cricket, we sort of switched on. But, you know, you're here for, not a long time, a good time. So I think if you get the balance right, and that's one of the difficulties these days with professional sports when, you know, it's so... Everything's so scrutinised and it's so strict, and you don't really see the characters that we had, through our era. And Warnie was one of them. He was a great character. Obviously, he's, he took a lot of the attention away from other players if you're at a nightclub or an airport or something. So it was great to play with. Obviously, a super player. So those were the days. We can all remember them.
I want to ask you about that because the one thing that people don't know about Mark Waugh, you had a really interesting role, I reckon, in that Australian cricket team at the time. You're a guy, you always trained hard, you did the right thing, but you always spoke your mind.
So you were like the voice of reason, and it was huge egos in that team at the time. You know, you had the Warns of the world, you know, the Dean Jones, all these sort of guys who had huge, huge egos. Did you realise you could say things that actually would resonate to them?
Not really. I mean, yeah, we did have some big egos, but I think though, you know, we had a lot of guys, a bit like Tubby Taylor and Steven, who would pull those guys into line. You know, if Warnie was bludging or something, or not quite doing the right thing, then you'd have a quiet word to him, and he was man enough to sort of step into line. But I think in those days, my ethos is just be yourself, be honest. You can't get in trouble for telling the truth, can you? Well, you can, but I mean, I suppose you can, yeah. You're right, you can. But generally speaking, you know, you can't get a lawsuit against you, can you, if you tell the truth? But that's the way I played my cricket, but kept it simple. And often the simple way was the best way. You know, even at team meetings, you know, we'd rave on about where to bowl. And I'd just say, just top of off stump and about three bounces and over. That's what you need to do. Knock their heads off and we're right. So, yeah, it was a simple way of playing, but I was just sort of myself and whatever happened.
Now, I want to ask you, Tuck, I mentioned at the start, you play in a Sheffield Shield final. You get the great Alan Border out twice. You then, maybe a year or two later, have 2 years off cricket. You totally quit cricket. I think you move overseas. You finally come back. You make your comeback match 12 or 13 years later, 2003-2004. By the way, based on those stats, you're due for a comeback in the next 2026. So we'll look forward to that one. But talk me through that game. Steve Waugh, Mark's brother, was captain, New South Wales. You hurt your hand. What happened?
Well, I dived for a ball in the outfield and split my webbing in my finger. And it was sort of bleeding. You don't like bleeding on the ball. That's no fun for anyone. So at the tea break, I went down with the doctor to get a couple of stitches put in it. And it was in a really bad place for a leg spin bowler. But I originally wanted to get the glue, but the doctor didn't have the glue. All he had, he said, oh, it's all right, we'll put a couple of stitches in it. So he needled me with some anaesthetic. And I basically couldn't feel my whole arm. So at the tea break, I said to Steve Rixon, the coach, mate, I can't feel my arm. I reckon I should sit out for a couple of overs. I can sort of starting to come back. I was too scared to talk to Stephen about it. So I just sat out. But while I was off, Dominic Thornley, who was 12th man, took two absolute screamers. He caught Stuart Law diving behind himself at backward square, a ball that I wouldn't have got a hand on. And he took another one running back over his shoulder. I probably would have got a hand on that, but I was a 30% chance of catching it. So at that point, Stephen wanted me to bowl. So Dominic Thornley comes running off, and I run back on into the huddle, and Steve says to me, oh, what's going on? I said, oh, you know, I just got a couple of stitches. It's fine, wouldn't worry about it. It should be all right. He said, oh, you know, can you feel? He said, yeah, I can feel. Yeah, no problem with that. He said, well, if you can feel, you can bowl it. You're fucking on. none for three off that.
That's got a bit of pressure there, but I'm looking forward to your comeback, Tuck. I want to ask you, Junior, now, mate. That 99 World Cup, we win that. I didn't play in the final. I think I was 13th man. Brennan Julian was 12th man. The Lua, we used to call him, a very attractive man. And Damien Martin. Damien Martin, myself, we were all single at the time. We were going to not come back with the team. We were going to go to south of France and Venezuela. That's where we worked out all the best-looking women were at that time. But Cricket Australia made us come back for the ticket take parade. There was no business class seats left, so the three of us who didn't play were in first class. We're sending you guys back champagne. You weren't very happy.
Mate, I did not know that. That is wrong. And you haven't changed. You and BJ are still flying first class. But yeah, mate, you had a good tournament, I think.
Yeah.
You didn't make many mistakes. How many games did you play?
Just two on that one.
I think BJ played one against Bangladesh, against the big boys, yeah. So you just... You had more roots than drinks and your runs and wickets, it'd be safe to say. You and BJ and Marto. Three good-looking boys, though, on the bench, yeah. Three good-looking boys. But, we had a strong squad. I mean, for you guys not to get a game, we must have had a strong squad because you could play all right. So, but great tournament, wasn't it? We started off slow as anything. We lost our... We did beat Scotland, though, in the first game. We beat Scotland, then we got beaten by the Kiwis. Pakistan beat us, a bit similar to the way this tournament's gone for Australia. You know, lost the first two, and then we just started to, you know, get the odds better, get out to about 20-1 and get the cash on. So Australia been very similar in this tournament, but it was a great experience, that World Cup, obviously. And we flogged Pakistan in the final. They were useless in the final. But no, I didn't know you flew first class.
Yeah, I did.
I'm really dirty now.
Now, Junior, I want you to tell this story. You've got to get the punchline right this time. So we told this story at Scott's college luncheon, and you slightly got the punchline wrong. So I'm praying you'll get it right this time. But I want you to tell a story about Greg Matthews, who's an old teammate of yours, Adrian. And at the time, your brother, Steve, would wear the red rag out of his pocket. It's for good luck. And Greg Matthews started to call to 12th man, doing a G signal. And he was calling for his wife's red G string to hang it out of his pocket. Like...
Well, that's the story, isn't it?
Well, no. Well, so, but the story was, and you asked him, why was he doing it?
Well, that's the story, basically. So if... fuck, I haven't got much to work with there. Shit. But G Matthews, he was a character. Let's talk a bit about Greg Matthews. And I was lucky enough to bat with him in my first test match in Adelaide, or unlucky enough to bat with me. he was different to everybody else. He'd be going out when we were going to sleep. We'd be coming home from wherever. Matthews was walking out in his weird coloured jeans and technicolour shirts, and on his way out, he had the bandana, didn't he? He had the bandana on his head too, and he'd be going out at 12 o'clock. We'd be going to sleep. My debut in against England, I did okay. I got 100. But the worst thing was batting with Greg Matthews for a full session. Like, he nearly ran me out 40 times. And to this day, he said, man, I carried you in that innings. I got 98 in a session. He said he carried me. I don't know how he worked that one out. But, he was a weirdo. But that particular game, I remember in New Zealand, it was about 35 degrees. It was boiling hot. And we're going out, and he had this big, thick leather jacket on. And everyone's sweating up, and they got shorts. And he goes, man, that's the price you pay for looking cool. He just had the big leather jacket on. He was a different cat altogether. But this particular occasion you're talking about, Stephen had the famous red rag hanging out of his strides when he played Test match cricket. And I think Mo thought he'd get a bit of the flavour and try and emulate that. So we're playing Queensland at the Gabba, and we're in a bit of trouble as usual up there, because they had a good bowling attack. They had Carl Rackerman, Billy McDermott, Dirk Tasler, maybe John Maguire in those days. Casper. So they had a good bowling attack. And Moe, for whatever things he did off the field, as soon as he got on the field, he switched on. He was a very, very good player. Very underrated, especially his batting. I think he averaged nearly 40 in Test match cricket. But this particular day, we could see this red thing hanging out of his strides, and we're just wondering what the hell it was. So we sent P. Farhad out there, the physio, the drinks break, said, Farhad, get out there and let us know what's going on with that red rag, that red thing that's hanging out of Greg Matthews' pockets. So Farhad toddles off as he does. He comes back in, he goes, boys, he said, that's Gillian's G-string. That's his wife's G-string. He just wanted to...
Want it close to me.
He wanted to have his missus close to him. So he was batting with the G-string hanging out of his strides in a Sheffield Shield match. I'm not sure it was Gillian's, but anyway, could have been someone else's. So he had the red G-string sticking out of his strides.
My favourite Greg Matthews story was a team dinner, full strength New South Wales side, Taylor, Slater, I think it was, and Greg Matthews showed up with a mate. And he says, team, this is my mate, Chemical Man. Chemical Man, this is the team. And Tubby goes, mate, you can't have this bloke. This guy was like, looking like this, and he goes, don't worry, mate, you won't eat much, Tubby. Anyway, see what you do. Tuck, what's the story about you and Tom Moody? What happened there?
Yeah, thank you for that one, Shane. So in my second season, I was sort of going all right, wasn't going too bad, and we played Western Australia at the SCG. I was feeling pretty good about myself. First innings, I took my only five for whatever it was, and I'd actually got Tom Moody out. So in the second dig, I was feeling pretty good about bowling at him. But unfortunately, first ball was a half tracker. This is about my 10th over. First ball was a half tracker, 6. Second ball, half tracker, 6. And the sequence for the rest of the over went 4, 6, 4, 4 for a total of 30 runs off the over. So, thank you. And as a matter of fact, I believe that still stands as a record in first class cricket in Australia to this day.
I love it.
But Henry Lawson, the coach, was pretty. The captain was pretty good about it. He just wandered past and said, "That'll do, Tuck." Not so nice was Wayne Holdsworth, though. We were passing each other in the field to get to our respective positions,
and he just ran past me giggling like a 12-year-old schoolgirl. Absolutely no support from Cracker.
Yeah, I love the Wayne Holdsworth story when he was just started playing for New South Wales, and there's this girl knocking on the change room door, and she's asking for Henry, Jeff Lawson. And Wayne goes up to his new captain, Jeff Lawson, and says, "Oh, there's some fat girl at the door wants to talk to you, Henry." And he goes, "That fat girl's my wife." Yeah, so it was a... Yeah, I don't think he was 12th man next game, I think. Listen, I want to... we've got a great afternoon plan. We've got Mark Gable coming on soon from the Choir Boys. He's going to sing us some songs. Mark, who... I thought the song Run to Paradise was a drug song. He says, no, it's an anti-drug song. He couldn't believe he grew up in the Northern Beaches, and he thought... He couldn't believe how people were trying to escape paradise by and living there. And then he said he got divorced at 30. He turned to Keith Richards for 20 years. So I'm looking forward to hearing him sing some songs. I'm looking forward to that. But I want to thank my two guests, the two Edwards, middle name Edwards, Mark Edward Wall and Adrian Edward Tucker. Thank you, boys, for being on Lunch with Lee. Yeah.
Just for fun, but you run to paradise. And Jenny, I'll meet you at the grocery store. You don't need a friend when you can't score, when you run to paradise. Get up and dance. Just kidding. Johnny, we were always best of friends. We stick together and defend. But you run to paradise. Oh, mama, now don't you worry about me anymore. When I see you crying at the door. To paradise. That's right, they had it all worked out. You were young and blind, you could never do wrong. That's right, they were so surprised. You open their eyes up. You don't want anyone. You don't want. Why'd I let him slip away? 'Cause I lived in paradise.
Everybody,
run to paradise.
Sing it better up.
Run to paradise.
And more of ya.
Run to paradise.
Oh, she said it's gonna be alright. Gonna pack my back so I can. Mind if I abuse myself so I can hold my head up? Hold my head up. You don't want anyone. You don't want anyone. Don't tell me this is paradise. You don't need anyone.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Lee, for asking me. Remember what I always say. It's actually remember what I always say. Bad jokes. Sorry. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
One, two.
Two, three, four.
One, two.
One, two, three, four.
You don't want anyone. Great day and great lives.
That's it for Lunch with Lee this week. A big thank you goes out to our guests, Mark Waugh and Adrian Tucker, and Mark Gable on guitar. Make sure you hit follow on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. And do us a favour, hit 5 stars. And while you're there, and if you're passionate, please leave a review. It means a lot to us. And come check us out on Instagram at I'm at Lunch with Lee. Our official Lunch with Lee photography was done by Felicity Kelly. You can find her on Instagram at Felicity Kelly Portraits. And once again, thanks to our producer, Dan McHugh. We'll be back soon with some more legendary guests. We'll see you then, guys. Take care.